One of the best meals I remember is we traveled to years ago. We went to New Jersey to celebrate my wife's grandfather's 90th birthday. And we went out to this Spanish tavern in New Jersey. And we drive up to this thing. I'd never been in New Jersey. We drive up to this tavern, and it looks like kind of like a rundown house from the outside. And I'm thinking, this is where we're having this big birthday dinner. Like, all right, whatever. So we go into this room downstairs, and then I walk in, and as soon as I walk into the room, I'm kind of like, all right. You get to the table, and it's fancy, and there's like a nice bottle of red wine and a pitcher of sangria to start on the table, and these appetizers, and then you order the food, right? And there's these options. So Stacy and I each got something different. I got this filet mignon that's probably like that thick and just juicy through the middle. And Stacy got lobster. Well, here's the thing. We're not real fancy. So the lobster comes, and it comes with a little like claw cracker. And we both look at each other like, we don't know what to do. So we have to like turn to our dad, who's at the next table, and be like, "Yo, dad, how do we do this? What are we even doing here?" And we're just laughing because we have no idea how to eat this. But it was so good with the butter sauce and everything. Yeah, but it's this phenomenal meal. And here's the thing: these really good meals, we tend to remember. We like food. We like to be together around these types of things, so we remember food. Well, we're talking about food that we remember because today we are kicking off our Road to the Cross series with the Last Supper, the meal that Jesus ate with his disciples before he's arrested and goes to the cross. So it's our series leading up to Easter, and we're going to start with the Last Supper. Now, we're going to use, throughout this whole kind of path of Jesus' final days, we're going to use Mark's gospel account. And that's where we're going to draw these passages from. And today, we're actually going to get to the part where we draw our communion passage from, and that's what we're going to relate to. How to deal with communion based on Jesus' Last Supper with his disciples. So, big thing to take away today, pretty simple. When we think about communion, when we come to communion, I want to encourage you to take time to remember. Take time to remember. I grew up in a church. We took communion every week, or no, not every week, sorry, every month. And there was a table up in the front, and it was inscribed on the front that said, "This do in remembrance of me." So, it's always about this remembering as we take communion. So let's start by diving into part of the passage. The whole passage will be Mark 14, 12 through 26. We are going to break it up into what I'm calling the three P's of this passage. So we'll look at three different P's from this passage. Verses will be all up here behind me, as always, or in the Bibles on your table. I'm in the NIV translation as usual. So let's look at the first part, Mark 14, 12 through 16. Let's read that and see what's going on. All right, Mark 14, 12. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when it was customary to sacrifice the Passover lamb, Jesus' disciples asked him, "Where do you want us to go and make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" So he sent two of his disciples, telling them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. Say to the owner of the house he enters, 'The teacher asks, where is my guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there." The disciples left, went into the city, and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared the Passover. Our first P when it comes to communion is preparation. Prepare. Everything for this meal was prepared ahead of time by Jesus. He's prepared for this even before he sent his disciples to do this. All right, he tells him, "Go into the city and follow a man carrying a jar of water." Now, this sounds like, okay, there's some random dude they're going to follow. This is actually a big signal because at this time, a man carrying a jar of water would have been very uncommon. Women carried the jar of water. Men were more likely to carry wineskins or something else. So to see the man carrying the jar, this is a predetermined signal. This is the dude you got to follow. So he tells him that, all right? Then it gets to the owner of the house. Now, owners were to give open rooms to people coming into the city to celebrate the Passover. Customarily, the Passover was celebrated inside the city limits of Jerusalem. This is why Jesus and the disciples had to come in. They were staying in Bethany, just outside of the city at this time. So it wasn't uncommon for owners to allow people to use their rooms. But Jesus had this set up ahead of time because all the disciples have to say is, "Hey, the teacher wants his room." So Jesus probably had this all worked out with this man ahead of time. All right, and then he's going to show them this room that's fully prepared, a fully furnished room. We're talking rugs, carpets, cushions, couches. All right, reclining was customary for this type of meal, so all of this setup was needed. So the room's going to already be fully furnished. Jesus has this completely prepared. All right. So I was trying to think about a meal that we go through where we have to prepare for. So I went to my favorite meal of the year, Thanksgiving. All right. Thanksgiving is like my personal Super Bowl. All right. I love Thanksgiving. We get ready for it. I wouldn't say that I'm quite preparing for Thanksgiving 2022, but in my brain, I'm probably not that far off. All right. So we go through like days. Stacy and I always host it. We have family over and friends, a lot of people in our small house, pack it all in. It's fun, but it takes a lot of work to get ready. All right. So I'm thinking I do two turkeys, grill one and smoke one. I got to know how far in advance to get them because based on the weight, I got to thaw them properly. And Stacy can probably see the smoke coming out of my head. Like, all right, if this one's 25 pounds and it's like a day in the fridge to thaw for every 4 pounds, and I got to like write it out on a whiteboard trying to figure out when I have to get this thing in the fridge to thaw it. All right. Because I need them fully thawed so I can prep them. Well, then we got to clean up the house again. Small house. We got to get everything cleaned up so people can sit somewhere, get the tables out. All right. Are we doing, you know, big family style at one table like she wants, or like three individual tables like I want, you know, and then we're back and forth. And what are we putting where? The fact is we have to prepare. Then we got to assign everybody everything else to bring. We got to say, Lindsay, get the pastizo made. And everybody else, what are you bringing? It's preparation. All right. It's all about preparation. It's more than just the food. It's setting everything up. It's getting all the other dishes. These big meals take preparation. Jesus prepared also for the Last Supper. And it shows that Jesus knows how important this meal is going to be because he sets his own plan in motion. If we think about our lives and the plan God has for our lives, he makes the plan a lot of times. We have to put it in motion and do it. He's putting his own plan in motion. He's already probably set up some of these things that he tells his disciples to go do. All right, so what do we do with this? If we know Jesus prepared for the Last Supper, what do we do with this for communion? And I would say this, remember to prepare for communion. All right, and I mean prepare your heart, prepare your mind, quiet yourself before God before coming to the communion table. I would say notice what I call those little nudge-worthy moments where you feel something tugging at you. I don't know if you've ever been in a meeting or with a group of people, or maybe the boss is up there saying something, and you kind of feel like, man, I got to comment on this. Or somebody's even next to you nudging you like, hey, I know you got something to say to that. If you ever come get ready to take communion, and you feel something in you, and you feel like, man, I got to bring this before God, that's that nudge. So pay attention to those. Prepare yourself to bring that stuff before God when you come to communion. God knows what's in your heart, but still prepare to come to him with whatever he's put on your heart. So Jesus prepared, and I think we should follow his example to prepare for communion as well. All right, so that first P is prepare. All right, let's find our second one. This is going to be Mark 14:17-21. Let's read it first. It says, when evening came, Jesus arrived with the 12. While they were reclining at the table eating, he said, truly I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me. They were saddened, and one by one they said to him, surely you don't mean me. It's one of the 12, he replied, one who dips bread into the bowl with me. The Son of Man will go just as it is written about him, but woe to that man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better for him if he had not been born. Our second P is prophecy. Jesus prophesies at this table. And he starts, he says that the truly I tell you, this is Jesus' way of speaking truth. If you've been with us for the Sermon on the Mount series, Jesus many times has said, truly I tell you, before he drops the big truth on the people listening to him. This is his, hey, pay attention, stop what you're doing and listen to me. So he starts with one of the people eating with him will betray him. This is a big deal that somebody eating with him will betray him. Psalm 41:9 says, even my close friend, someone I trusted who I shared bread, has turned against me. Betraying someone that you shared a meal with was like the highest form of betrayal in this time, because those are people that you're close with, their family, their confidants. These are people you trust. You're literally sharing a meal with them. All right, so it's this big deal that he is going to be betrayed. All right, and I have a tendency, as I've read this many times in my life, to kind of gloss over this because I know what's coming. We know the betrayal's coming. We know it's Judas. We know so much about this. But take yourself back a minute. The disciples didn't know this was coming. They had no clue. This has to throw them off and shock them so much. So they're all asking, surely you don't mean me. Like, there's no way. I couldn't betray you. I can't be the one. Odds are Judas probably asked the same question, even though he knows he's going to do it, to kind of hide himself. All right, and we don't know, it doesn't say if Jesus knows it's Judas, but he knows somebody is going to betray him, and it's going to lead to his death. And then he finally says, he's given clues about it. He's like, it's somebody eating with me. It's one of the 12, and then he takes it all the way to say, the one of you who dips bread into the bowl with me is going to betray me. All right, so he says all this, and then he comes to verse 21. And what he does in this is he confirms how he will die. He says, the Son of Man will go just as it is written about him. So he confirms Old Testament prophecies that he's going to be betrayed. He has to go and he has to die. All right, that I can get, right? He confirms a prophecy. He's got to die this way. And then he finishes it by pronouncing what we would say, pronouncing a woe, or basically condemning the man who we know to be Judas, who is going to betray him. He's saying, better if that man had never been born. So here's what I wrestle with this passage, because Jesus confirms he's supposed to die this way. It's a divine plan. It's divine fulfillment. So was Judas justified in what he did? And I like to think about this kind of stuff. I sat at my desk literally staring out my window for like 10 minutes this week being like, was Judas justified? Like, how do I even rectify this? Because somebody had to betray Jesus. It's the prophecy. It's how Jesus has to die. Somebody's got to do it. Judas did what he was supposed to. What do they think? Well, Jesus answers it and says, no, it is better if that man had never been born. Now, if you're familiar with the story, Judas eventually does it, can't live with himself, and ends up ending his own life later on. Now, thankfully, God works all of this out in his own way, because it's not something that we can rectify in our own heads, at least I can't, about what how to wrestle with this. But I did, because it's like, Jesus, like, man, this has to happen. It's going to be okay. But woe to that man that did it. And it's crazy to think about, because he's just sitting there with these people that are his friends and has to tell them what's going to happen, all right? Think about it. If I'm sitting at Thanksgiving, now they're reclining, right? So if I'm just going to recline back at the table, and here's what I love about this, because this was customary to do it. There's no grandma or mom telling me, Jeffrey, get your elbows off the table and sit up straight. No, they reclined. This is what it was. So imagine you're all at my Thanksgiving table today. All right, and I'm sitting here, we're going to eat a nice meal. I'm like, oh, hey, one of you is going to betray me. Highest form of betrayal. And it's going to lead to my death. That's what I'm saying. And you have no idea this is coming. All right, think about that for a minute. And I say, it's one of you. How many do we have? One, two. All right, one of the number of you in this room this morning is going to do that. That mindset has to be, are you crazy? Right? You got to be nuts. There's no way. And then I say, surely, yep, I tell you, the one of you that dips your spoon into the stuffing with me is going to betray me. It's nuts. It doesn't make any sense. But Jesus says, this is what's going to happen. This is it. And then I finish it by saying, woe to you. It is better if you had never been born, if you're the one that does it. The shock value of this is insane to me, what this must have been like. This is a really comfy chair, by the way. I didn't realize how comfortable it was going to be. It's actually really nice. Good job, Senior Center. But this is nuts. It's just this crazy prophecy that Jesus does, but he does it, and he prophesies at this table. So it's this huge shock, all right? But there's no excuse for the person that does it, even though it has to happen, all right? So what I think we need to remember about this prophecy from Jesus is just this. Remember the surely not me part, because all of his disciples are saying, surely not me, which is like, there's no way. It couldn't have been me, right? I'm this good, upright Christian. I do my best. I go to church. I read my Bible. It couldn't have been me. I can't do it. But the fact is, we all do have weaknesses and faults and temptation. And I think when we remember this prophecy, we remind ourselves to be on guard against those, to be on guard against them, because our choices matter. Our words, our actions, they still matter. Yes, we have grace and forgiveness in God, and that's amazing, but we're still responsible for what we do, and that's kind of what Jesus is prophesying at. Did Judas carry out a divine plan? Yeah, he does, but he's still responsible. That's what Jesus is getting at. So remembering Jesus' prophecy can help us realize that we're all susceptible to fall. We all do have weakness and temptation, and we have to be on guard. But thankfully, we have God as our strength, who is stronger than any of those temptations. But we do need to remember this prophecy that Jesus put out. So that's our second one. So we've had preparation and prophecy. Let's look at part three, the last P of the passage. This will be Mark 14:22-26. While they were eating, Jesus took bread. When he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take it. This is my body." Then he took a cup. When he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many," he said to them. "Truly, I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God." And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Our third P is partake. They actually take the Lord's Supper. They eat. They partake in it. And this is the actual kind of Lord's Supper part. It mirrors Matthew 26 pretty closely. When I come up here and do communion every week like we do, I read Matthew 26. Mirrors Mark very closely here. So what he does is he breaks bread, and he gives thanks, and he passes it out. And he refers to the bread as his body. Now, there have been a lot of times where we try to figure out what's the symbolism here, what's this mean. And I've heard it at times saying, well, the bread being broken is Jesus' body being beat up. And I actually think that's not as much of his point. His point is more that the bread is his body. And when it's broken up, it's so that it can be passed out, so that we all have Jesus' presence. Right? The bread is Jesus' physical presence that he came to earth. He was there with the disciples. When we take the bread or the cracker, Jesus' presence is with us. Right? So I think that's more about his presence. He was fully man. He was completely human. He doesn't go... He's fully human in this moment, all right? And he's still fully God, but also fully human. And that then leads to the cup, all right? And he describes the cup as his blood, and this is the actual sacrificial element. And he says it's the blood of the covenant. This likens back to Jeremiah 31 that says, "The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah." Jesus' blood pouring out, this cup imagery, is sealing that covenant, because the spilling of blood, when animal blood was spilled in the Old Testament, that sealed covenant. So blood sealed and made those covenants firm. And Jesus says it's poured out for many. This "many" here, it's a very inclusive word. It means it's available to all who accept it, to accept Jesus' grace and forgiveness. This is available, all right? And then in verse 25, he does something that's actually pretty cool. He looks forward. He points forward to drinking it new in the kingdom of God. Because if we think about this cup imagery and the spilling of blood, this is brutal imagery, all right? He's going to literally spill his blood out, have it poured out. It's pain, it's suffering, it hurts. But he goes forward because he's saying there is a future. Even though this happens, there is a future. There is hope. There is a kingdom which has already come in Jesus, but will one day be fully realized in heaven. And that's where Jesus is going and where we can go. He's basically saying, redeemed sinners will be able to be with me, be with the Messiah in the kingdom. There is hope. It makes this a meal to remember, I think. So let's finalize this Thanksgiving meal we're all having together. Right? So we're going to make it significant. So let's say then I get up. Maybe I'm out of my chair, finally, this time. Decide to stand up. And I say, this is going to be the last meal we're having together in my house. We're moving. We're going somewhere else. We're not going to be here anymore. This is the last turkey that we're going to eat together. Remember me by the turkey. All right? Anytime you eat a turkey, remember Jeff. I know. Sounds, I'm not making light of Jesus being the bread, but think about it that way. Remember the turkey, and remember whatever the drink is you're having, all right? Remember that, because we're not going to do it anymore here. We're not going to do it again until we meet together in some other place, all right? So it's somber because it's a little bit sad, but it also points forward because there's more coming, and we'll get to do it again in the future. That's what Jesus is getting at with this whole thing. So someday we meet together again and do it, even though this is the last time we will do it here. So what should we remember when we're actually partaking and taking communion? I think there's two things. And the first one is sacrifice. Remember Jesus' sacrifice. what he did for us, the bread, his earthly life. He came to earth as a human, as a fully man. And then the cup, the blood, it was spilled, and it had to be spilled. And it's brutal, and it was painful, and there was suffering, but he did it to seal the covenant that God made. And because of that covenant, because of his sacrifice, we have hope, which is the second thing to remember when we partake, is that there's hope. It doesn't end with this brutal death of Jesus that he suffered through, he foretold about. There is more. There is a kingdom that we can be in as redeemed sinners. We were bought back by the blood of Jesus. So we can remember the sacrifice and have a somber tone in communion, but it doesn't have to be only that. There can be joy, there can be hope in our spirit because of what we have in the future. So I want to encourage you to take time to remember the three P's of this passage. Take time to prepare. And preparing, I think, it doesn't have to happen in the few minutes when you grab the communion elements here at church. It can happen any time throughout the week. You can always be examining your heart and your mind and feeling those nudge-worthy moments from God. You can always be doing that. And then remember the prophecies. Remember to be on guard about our vulnerabilities, our weaknesses. And remember that we have those. We are going to have those temptations, but we have strength in God. We have God in our corner, but we should still be on guard. And then remember when we partake to actually come before God. Actually do it. Come before God. Remember the sacrifice that Jesus made. Remember that. But then also remember the hope and the joy that we do have in the future with Christ, because it didn't end on the cross. It doesn't end with the cup being spilled. We have a future and a hope. So let's remember those three things when we take communion. Let's pray. God, we thank you for this morning. God, we thank you for this passage, for the meal that Jesus shared with his disciples, and how much we can learn from it, God, and that we can still apply it today, God. God, I pray that all of us would prepare our hearts throughout the week and on Sunday mornings, God, at any time before we come before you, we prepare our hearts and our minds to come to you. And God, I pray that we would remember just remember our own weaknesses, God, our own temptations and vulnerabilities, and always be on guard against those. And God, I thank you that you are stronger than any of those that can stand in our way, and that when we come to you with those, that you will help us overtake them with your strength. And God, I pray that we would come before you, that we would come before you in communion on Sunday mornings and any other time throughout the week, God, that we would come to you and remember the sacrifice that Jesus made. But also, God, remember the hope we have in you, the future that we have in you in heaven. And God, we're so grateful and so thankful for that. In your name.